Osho, the sun rises in the evening. Talks on Zen. Discourse number 8. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
The first question. Please help me to be happy. To be ordinary. I find that all my upsets, conflicts, turmoils have to do with this desire to be special and nothing else. Sudha, it is impossible to help because you are not ordinary. Nobody is. Nobody can be. Everybody is unique and extraordinary. The problem arises when you start trying to be that which you already are. Then you fail. If you were ordinary, there was no difficulty to attain to extraordinariness. There was every possibility. But the fish is in the ocean and is trying to be in the ocean. Failure is absolute. It is doomed. How you can be ordinary? This whole existence is extraordinary. Each pebble on the soul is extraordinary. And each grass leaf is extraordinary. And I am not talking about only lotuses and roses. Of course, they are too extraordinary. But an ordinary grass flower is also not ordinary. All that exists is divine. How it can be ordinary? Don't try to be ordinary, otherwise you will go on failing and you will create misery for yourself. Even I cannot help. Even I cannot go against the Tao, against the fundamental law of life. God only creates the extraordinary. This whole existence is special. These raindrops, this morning, the people around you, this moment is extraordinary. It can't be repeated again. No, never. Not even in the whole eternity it will be repeated again. You will never find these raindrops falling again. This sound, this morning, these people. This whole situation is extraordinary. It only happens once. You will not find another Sudha all around the world. You can go on searching. And not only in the present time, even in the past or in the future, no Sudha will ever be repeated. This is how we are. But once you start trying to be extraordinary, you will get into difficulty. To accept as you are and to accept as the whole is. If you can understand the extraordinariness of everything that exists, you have become ordinary. Sudha, it is not a question that you want to be extraordinary. You want to be special compared with other people. That too is absurdity. no comparison is possible. How can you be compared with anybody? Nobody is like you. You don't compare a dog with a parrot, or do you? There is no similarity. There is no likeness. How can you compare a dog with a parrot? Or a tree with a man? Or a rock with a river? In fact, no two individuals are alike, hence they are incomparable. You are you, and the other is other. To understand this is to be extraordinary and ordinary both. Extraordinary in the sense because existence only creates unique people, and ordinary in the sense that everybody is extraordinary. So there is nothing extraordinary in being extraordinary. Everybody is so. The comparison disappears. And when there is no comparison, there is no possibility of the ego. You ask, please help me to be happy. I can help you only to be not miserable. I cannot help you to be happy. But if you are not miserable, you will be happy. But no direct way is possible to make you happy. If it was possible, I would have made you happy long before. I am not a miser. I would have given it to you if it was possible to give at all. But there is no possibility. Happiness is not something that is going to happen to you from the outside. Once you stop being miserable, happiness is. Happiness wells within your being. It simply arises out of you. You start blooming. The hindrances have been removed. And this seems to be your greatest obstacle. You want to be extraordinary. I declare you, Sudha, you are. But remember, everybody else is too. So now there is no need to be worried. I certify you. You need not prove it. Let this obstacle disappear. Accept your extraordinariness. Rejoice in it. Celebrate it. Walt Whitman says, I celebrate myself. I sing myself. Celebrate and sing. You are extraordinary. God has not made another person like you, will never make another person like you. This is only once that God exists as you, in you, in this form. This form is unrepeatable. Now what is lacking? All your misery is arising because you are trying to become it. It is your being. Becoming is irrelevant. And then suddenly you will see. If you can see the point, don't think about it, Sudha. Just see the point. It is so crystal clear. And a great burden from your chest will disappear. So you are extraordinary. you will have a deep breath. You will relax. And suddenly there is happiness. Happiness is not something that we have to produce or to do anything for it. It is natural, it is spontaneous. I can help you to be not in misery. Misery is your creation. Happiness is God's creation. Misery is the gift that you have given to yourself. Happiness is the gift that God has given to you. But you cling to misery. And when you cling, you feed it by our clinging. Drop it. Start dancing and singing and celebrating. End it right now. And don't say tomorrow, because tomorrow never comes. And don't say I will think over it. Either you have understood or you have missed. Thinking is not going to help. It is a simple fact. Let me repeat it again. Everybody is extraordinary. So nobody need to try. Don't suffer with this unnecessary inferiority. And if you suffer from it, you can go on suffering for ages. And you can go on creating, and you can go on finding new ways and means. Somebody has a longer nose than you, you are inferior. Somebody has blonde hair, you are inferior. Somebody has those beautiful eyes and you are inferior. Somebody is more intelligent and you are inferior. Somebody is a little taller and you are inferior. If you go on looking and searching for misery, it is available. You can find it in every person that passes by. Something or other you will find is missing in you. But this is your way of looking at things that creates misery. Forget everybody. Just look into the gifts that God has given to you, and gratitude arises. In fact, there is no reason, no reason that for this existence to be. No reason for this rain this morning, for this melody, this beautiful song that clouds are singing around. If it was not there, we could not have complained. If it was not there, we could not have asked that it should be. It is simply there. Without our asking, it is there. We have knocked, not even at the door, and the door is open. And millions of gifts are showering on you. Just look at those gifts and you will be surprised. You will be surprised that how you have been missing them. Just the joy of breathing is enough to be grateful. Just the joy of meeting a friend is enough to be grateful. Just the joy of sitting silently doing nothing. The joy of a morning or the evening. The joy of a night. Just go on looking for the joyous and you will find it. You only find that which you look for. You have been looking for misery. Now you can create misery. Today it is raining and tomorrow it will not be raining. then tomorrow you can be miserable. That why it is not raining today? And when it is raining, you are not grateful. Start feeling grateful. Happiness comes closer and closer the more you become grateful. Gratitude functions like a magnetism. The complaining mind repels happiness away. It closes doors. It all depends on you. I can show you the way, but you will have to walk on it. Buddha has said, Buddhas can only point the way. They cannot walk for you. But you will have to walk. I am showing you the way. You have become very clever, efficient in creating misery for yourself. Change the direction of your energies. Channelize them towards the joy, the beauty. This cuckoo calling from far away. And slowly, slowly you will see so many things were there, but you were not seeing at them. Your eyes were full of misery, hence you were missing. Your eyes were clouded, they were hazy, foggy, that's why you were missing. And one can miss by a small margin. One can miss only by a small thought. A small thought can become a barrier, and you can miss the whole beauty of the vast Himalayas. You can be there watching the beautiful peaks of the Himalayas and the sun falling on the Himalayan snow, showering gold all around, and a thought comes in your mind and the Himalaya has disappeared and the thought clouds you. You remember something. The other day somebody had insulted you, and that's enough. Or you start planning for the future, that tomorrow I have to leave, and the Himalaya has disappeared, and the thought is so small, and the Himalaya is so big, but even a small thought can hinder, because the thought is so close to you, and it can stand in between. Just a small particle of dust can fall in your eye. And just a small particle, almost invisible, can make you blind. And you cannot open your eyes. And you cannot see the sun shining. Sudha, do only one thing. Start dropping the very concept of inferiority, the very concept that you have to be extraordinary. Now, even this question contains it. She has signed the question, your ordinary Buddha, Sudha. Even in that, the ego is claiming that I am no ordinary Buddha. I am ordinary Buddha. You follow me? Buddhas are extraordinary people. I am not like those. I am an ordinary Buddha. This is claiming extraordinariness. Help me to be ordinary. You want to be extraordinarily ordinary? The ego ego can go on playing games, subtle games. You will have to look through and through. Just remember two things. One, you are already that which you want to be. Hence, there is no need to do anything for it. You can call it extraordinariness. You can call it ordinariness. It makes no difference. You are already that. And you can never be anything else than that. What you call does not matter. If you are in love with the word ordinary, then everybody is ordinary. If you love the word extraordinary, then everybody is extraordinary. Remember only one thing, that whatsoever you claim for yourself, you have claimed for the whole. And that is the trouble. You would like to be special, not just like everybody else. It happens. There is a beautiful parable. A man worshipped God for many years, and always asking that fulfill only one of my desires. God must have got tired, bored. One day he appears. And he said, okay, you won't leave me alone. Morning, evening, you continuously go on harping the same notes. Fulfill one of my desires. Okay, I'm here. What is your desire? And the man said, whatsoever I ask, could be immediately given to me. That is my desire. Very cunning man. God must have thought out of his innocence that he will ask one thing. He has asked all. He says only one desire. That whatsoever I ask should be given immediately to me. But you cannot defeat God. Because cunningness can never defeat innocence. God said perfectly okay. This will be so, but remember only one thing. Whatsoever you will ask, your neighbors will get double. Now the man was finished. Months passed, and God will come again and again. You have not asked anything. He stopped praying, and God will come again and again, morning and evening. And he will say, what? You have not asked yet. And the man became very bored with God. He thought and thought, but whatsoever he will get, neighbors will get double. It is pointless. He always wanted to have a beautiful palace. But what is the point now? The neighbors will have doubly big palaces. The very idea was cursing him, but killing him. He has lost all joy of life. Now there is no possibility of ever being happy. And this God comes morning and evening and tortures him. So one day he said, okay, give me a beautiful golden palace. Immediately his hut became a golden palace. He came out and he said, bigger palaces, doubly bigger, all golden. The whole town had golden palaces, only he was the poorest one. He went to a liar, because where else you can go? And such legal problems arise. The liar said, you don't be worried. And of course, God cannot win with a liar. The liar said, you ask. Now, make a big well in front of my house without a wall. So a big well appeared before his palace, and two wells appeared before everybody else. And then the liar said, now ask, make me one-eyed. Let my one eye disappear. The man said, what are you saying? He said, you just wait. La is la. His one eye disappeared and all the neighbors, both the eyes disappeared. Now the whole town blinds, and two wells in each palace garden. People started falling in wells. People started dying, and the man was utterly happy. He said, "Now my desires are fulfilled." So I know, Sudha, you will be in difficulty. I declare you extraordinary, but everybody else, all your neighbors, even Pramod, is doubly extraordinary than you. And please don't go to a liar. The second question: can I know a question, the answer of which you do not know? In fact, I don't know the answer of any question. All that I go on doing is destroying the questioner and the question. It is not answering. Just look what happened to Sudha. Destroyed, murdered. Is this an answer? I don't know a single answer. But once you ask a question, you are in my hands. Then I push you this way and that. Then I hit you this way and that. Ask the question and you are trapped. First I try to destroy the question and then the questioner. But that is the whole function of a master. The master is not there to answer your stupid questions. He has to destroy your stupidity so no questions arise again. So you cannot ask a question without being trapped in it. The questioner is a new person, it seems. His name is P. Jagannath Patro. He must be a new arrival, unacquainted with the ways things are dealt here. I am reminded of a story. Mulla Nasruddin was made a justice of peace, a JP. The first day he was in the court, and a man came rushing in. And the man was having only one underbeard and almost naked, and was shouting, "I have been robbed." Catch the people who have cheated me and robbed me. And Mulla Nasruddin asked, "Where you have been robbed? In this town?" He said, "Yes, in this town, just on the outskirts. I was going to Mecca on a religious pilgrimage. My money has been taken away. My clothes have been taken away, my wife also. I have been utterly robbed, and you have to save me, and you are the magistrate here, so do something." Mullah said, "No, this case does not come in my judiciary. It is not under my rule. You will have to go to the neighboring villages." He said, "Why? I have been robbed here." And the Mullah said, "I said no. Because those people who have robbed you can't belong to this town. They must belong to the neighboring villages." The man said, "How can you be so certain?" He said, "I am absolutely certain. Because things are done in a total way here. If they were of this village, they would have taken your underwear too. We don't do things so partially. You go to some other village, they must belong to some other place. Those people can't belong to my village. That much is certain. I know my people. They do things in a total way, in absolute way. Your underwear is enough proof that you have been not robbed by my people. When you ask a question, you are giving your head to me. That's why a disciple asks a question. He is asking, cut my head. The question is just an excuse. He is saying, destroy this mind. I'm not answering you, because the answer is not going to help. The answer will make you more knowledgeable. I'm not here to make you more knowledgeable. All knowledge that you have has to be taken away. You have to be robbed of it, and totally robbed of it. Not even an underwear has to be left. If I can destroy all that you have been carrying all along as knowledge, if I can help you to unlearn all that you have learned, if I can uncondition you of all your conditionings, then knowing will arise in you. Knowing is your inner capacity. It is your intuition. The question is arising in you because your knowing is obstructed. Because your knowing I is not functioning. Hence the question. Otherwise you will solve it yourself. You will not go to ask to anybody. And who can solve your question if you cannot solve it? And how anybody else can solve it? Your question implies your whole life in it. It is not just a question. It is only an indicator of 1001 things. When you ask a question, that question nobody else can ask. Only you can ask. That is specific. Because to ask that question, you had to live a certain kind of life. You had to be conditioned in a certain way. You had to pass through certain experiences. Nobody else has passed through those experiences except you. The question arises in you. It is the flowering of all the nonsense that has been taught to you. All the scriptures that have been fed into your biocomputers. All the books that you have read, the churches, the priests, the parents, all are implied in it. A question is not a simple thing. It is a very complex phenomenon. And I am not here to answer it. If I answer it, you will gather a little bit more knowledge. You will go home knowing a little bit more than you had come. I have not helped you. I have burdened you more. Your knowledge is the rock that is hindering you from knowing. Knowledge is the poison that doesn't allow you to know. The knowledge has to be utterly destroyed so that you can be left alone and naked. One can move towards God only when one is utterly naked. That nakedness is innocence. That nakedness is childlike. That nakedness is the purity of the heart. That nakedness is the heart. Mind is full of knowledge. The heart is absolutely empty. the work of a master is to help you unburden. So I don't answer your questions, I describe them. And if the situation is right, I not only describe the answer, I describe the questioner too. And if you are not, then you will know what is. When you are not, God is. You ask me, can I know a question, the answer of which you do not know? Now why you have asked this question? It must be coming out of a great ego. As if you are in an argument with me. As if you would like to defeat me. You would like to ask a question, the answer of which I don't know. Why? So that you can have the feeling that you are the person who has such a question that not even an enlightened person can answer it. You are not interested in solving problems of your life. You are more interested in showing your knowledge. But you cannot defeat me, because I don't answer questions at all. If I was answering questions, then there can be thousands of questions which I cannot answer. But I am not answering questions at all. That is not what is going on here. This is not a place of discussion, argument. This is a place of love. You are not here to debate with me. If you are here to debate with me, you are wasting your time. If you are here to be with me, not to debate, but to feel, but to be. If you are here to feel my presence, then only you should be here, otherwise not. If I was only answering questions, you can ask thousands of questions. And not very great they have to be. You can ask simple questions. Where is Timbuktu? And I may not be able to exactly pinpoint where it is. I have only heard the name. Timbuktu is a small place. Sometimes I cannot even figure it out where is a certain country. My geography is weak. My mathematics too. About history, I am absolutely absurd. Everything is topsy-turvy. Then you can ask 1001 questions. When Socrates was married to Xanthippe, I will not be able to answer you. You can find out millions of questions. That is not the problem at all. But that is not the purpose of your being here or my being here. It is not a kind of competition between the questioner and the answerer. We are not debating about anything. We are just being here to be together. We are learning the ways of togetherness. You are here to soak the energy that I am. You are here to drink the alcohol that I am. This is a place for drunkards. Now, sir, Jagannath Patro, you have come in a wrong company. This is not the place for you. Unless you are ready to move in a totally different dimension, the dimension where questions are not answered but destroyed. When a mind comes to a state where no question is left, because all questions have been destroyed, when a mind is in a non-questioning state, that is the clarity, transparency. That is where satori happens. That is where one comes in contact with existence. It is not by becoming knowledgeable that you will know. It is by becoming innocent that you will know. The third question, why are methods needed when releasement can happen instantly, here, now? I am so tired of trips. How many more must I try, only to find they don't work either? I know the problem is in me, and I know there is no problem. So now what? Celebrate now. Sing, dance, love, be. You say, why are methods needed when releasement can happen instantly here now? Because you cannot trust me. That's why. You cannot trust me. I go on declaring that you are Buddhas, already enlightened, but you are skeptical about it. You can believe that too very grudgingly, that a Gautam Buddha may have become enlightened, maybe, perhaps. A Jesus became enlightened, maybe. You can grudgingly concede that much. But to concede that you are enlightened is too much. You cannot give such a gift to yourself. You are so against yourself. You are so condemnatory towards yourself. You can immediately accept if somebody says you are a sinner. Just think of it. If somebody says you are a sinner, you are ready to bow down. Even if on the surface you deny, deep down you know that he is right. Because from the very beginning you have been taught, you have been poisoned, that you are a sinner. The teaching has gone into your very blood and bones and marrow. It has become part of you, that you are a sinner. All the religions of the world have been teaching this for centuries. Generations upon generations have been doing only one work, condemning men. You are not even aware of the self-condemnation that you have for yourself. The hate that you have for yourself. You don't love yourself. How can you allow yourself to be a Buddha? Releasement can happen this moment, but you won't allow it. Hence the methods are needed. If people can trust me, then there is no need for any method. The method is not going to help the releasement. Let me remind you. The method is only going to help you trust me. That's all. So I send you into therapy groups. Tirtha and Divya and Siddha and Amitabh and Pradeepa, and these people will work on you. They will help only one thing. They will help you to trust me. The whole function of therapy groups here is totally different than it is in the West. It has a totally different meaning and significance. It is to create trust. It is to create a little love for yourself. It is to create acceptance. Then I send you in meditations. Those meditations are cathartic. A cathartic meditation is just throwing all the repressed energy that is boiling within you, that won't allow you to trust. Dynamic, Kundalini and other meditations will take away much energy that hinders. It will be released. Slowly, slowly, you will become capable of trusting. It is only because of trust that methods have to be invented. If you trust already, then there is no need for any methods. You ask me why are methods needed when releasement can happen instantly. Releasement will always happen instantly. Whether it happens today or tomorrow, it will always happen instantly, suddenly. It is a sudden experience, a lightning. And the whole past disappears and you are abruptly cut from the past. You become discontinuous with it. The old has disappeared and the new is born. And the new is not a modification of the old. It has no relationship with the old. It is simply unrelated with the old. The old has not caused it either. It is not an effect of the old. It is utterly unrelated with the old. Krishnamurti has been saying the same thing for at least 50 years. But nothing much has happened. He goes on saying, that just now it is possible. You be aware, be awake. And people go on listening. Because the question is, they can't trust Krishnamurti that this can be just now. Their minds are spinning and weaving inside that this is not possible. How it can be possible? What will happen to my past karmas? I have to undo them. And what about all the crimes and the sins that I have committed? I have to be punished for them. And what about the judgment day? How it can happen right now? Deep inside these unconscious rumblings go on and on. And you go on listening. Seeing the failure of Krishnamurti, I have invented methods. I'm saying essentially the same thing. Because the message cannot be different. But methods I had to invent so that they can destroy or mistrust. Methods will help you to become unblocked. they will help you to become more flowing. They will help you to be less frozen. They will melt you. They will warm up the process of your being. Releasement is going to happen instantly. Any moment it is going to happen. But if you are ready, it is possible this very moment. Not even you have to wait for a single moment more. Why are methods needed when releasement can happen instantly here now? Because of you. Not because of me. From my side, I am very much puzzled why it is not happening to you. It should happen. Why it is not happening? Why you go on listening without understanding it? Why you listen only intellectually? Why you can't listen from the heart, from your totality? It is a constant wonder to me, a miracle, that people can go on listening every day and can go on remaining the same. Hence the methods. The methods are not for the releasement. You are not going to become enlightened by any meditation. No. Nobody has ever become enlightened by any meditation. But the meditations help. In a negative way they help. They remove the rocks and the stream starts flowing. They don't create the stream. They can't create. How rocks can create the stream? They have nothing to do with the nature of the stream. But they can prevent. Because there are things which are preventing you from trusting the moment, trusting God, trusting life, existence. You are shrunk in fear, in doubt. In doubt and fear you have armored yourself just to be secure, safe. You have created a great armor around yourself. Your body is no more an opening to existence. It has become closed. Your windows, your doors are all closed. The sun rises. Yes, the sun rises in the evening, but it cannot penetrate in you. It goes on rising. It goes on knocking on your door, but the knock is subtle. So subtle, so silent, that you cannot hear in your noisy mind, in that constant chatter that goes on inside you. These methods are negative methods. They will not give you enlightenment, but they will remove the barriers. And once the barriers are removed, once all the barriers are removed, enlightenment happens. It is nothing that you have to achieve. When you are available, the release, the liberation. You say, I am so tired of trips. Really? I don't think. If one is really tired, then one's trips are finished. You are still hoping. Maybe there is some trip, some way of tripping, so that you can attain. You are still hoping. By the corner of the eye you are looking. Maybe I have failed 99 times. But who knows? I may succeed the 100th time. be. God is, has not to be searched. God already is. You are not to discover Him. All that you have to do, you have to dance a mad song. You have to dance in such a mad way. And if you have a character, you will never meet God. Because your character will confine you into a certain straight jacket. You will become a stereotype. You will not be a living being anymore. You will be a noun, not a verb. And God is a verb, not a noun. God is a process, a dynamism. And a man of character, the so-called man of character, is dull, dead. He has to be dull and dead. Because if he is aware, then he will see the changes that is happening around. And he will have to change accordingly. He has to remain drugged into his unconsciousness. He has to remain fixed with his character. He is always afraid. Something may happen and he may have to change his character. He does not want to change his character. So he goes on remaining unaware of all that is changing. He creates also a society which is unchanging. That's why in the East the society has remained unchanging. It is because of the so-called character's obsession. If a man has to have a fixed character, then the society has also to be a fixed pattern. Only then he will be adjusted, otherwise there will be difficulty. So in the East, thousands of years have passed and things have remained almost the same. They have not changed. They have not been allowed to change. Because then there is fear. And that's what is happening in the West now. Because things are changing, people are losing characters. And the Western religious leaders are very much worried. Life is changing fast. Science has released so many energies that life goes on changing. And one has to change with it. One has to keep pace with life. And if one has to keep pace with life, he cannot remain in a fixed mode. It is very easy to live in an Indian village and remain in a fixed mode. It is very difficult to live in New York with a fixed mode of life. You have to be more fluid. So the Eastern people think Western people don't have any characters. What in fact is the reality is, the West has become more alive, more changing. And the East is still dull and dead, fixated, obsessed, and afraid. If anything changes outside, then I will have to change inside too, because my inside has to correspond with the outside. Small changes bring difficulties. For example, since electricity came in India, many Jainas have started eating in the night. Now, for centuries they have not eaten in the night. They had a fixed mode. But when electricity came, suspicions arose, doubts arose. Now, what is the problem? Electricity is there. Light is there. There is no fear of any insect or any ant entering into your food. You will not be killing anything. You can have more light than you can have in the day, now in the night. So what is the problem? Many Janas started eating in the night. And when one thing falls, other things start falling because everything is connected. Everything is connected with each other. If you can eat in the night, and if Mahavira is wrong about it, maybe he is wrong about other things too. That's why the church has been fighting against science, because it creates suspicion. The church has believed that the earth is flat, and then the scientists started saying it is not flat, it is a globe. Now, if Jesus is wrong about one thing, why he can't be wrong about other things? Then he is no more infallible. Suspicion will arise. He may be wrong about God too. He may be wrong about the judgment day. He may be wrong absolutely, who knows? Because he is fallible. Religions have always insisted that nothing should change. These religions are all in the service of death. I am giving you a totally new religion, a new vision. A religion of life and not of death. A religion of intelligence, not of stupidity. A religion of dynamism, not of stagnancy. A religion which will keep you flowing with the flow of the total and will not in any way hold you back from the movement of the total. It will keep you in tune with the whole. I don't give a character to you. I only give consciousness. My whole emphasis is on consciousness. Sitting is vain. Walking is vain. Talking is vain. Being silent is vain. All should be only awareness. Awareness should be your God. Let awareness be the only fundamental law, and then you will be out of all trip. Otherwise, it is difficult. You can go on changing from one trip to another. A Christian can become a Hindu. This is just changing the train. Trip remains. A Hindu can become a Christian, and nothing changes. Only words. He will not go to the temple, he will go to the church. And the same can be done with me too. But remember, that will be your responsibility. I can also become a trip to you. I don't want to become a trip to you. I want to become a liberation to you. From my side, I want you to liberate. But still, your cooperation will be needed. The very idea of liberation, and you can catch hold of it and can make a trip out of it. And your mind is very, very efficient in making trips out of everything. Beware. Khaldugan, on 20th you are going to become a sannyasin. Remember, this is not a trip. This is the end of all trips. Let it be the end of all trips. How long you are going to journey and journey and journey? Now come home. Now come to rest. Enough of the trips. Learn from me how to rest, how to relax, how to be. The fifth question. Last night, I had this dream. In the middle of the night, the sun appears, completely out of its place. This filled me with a sacred terror, which was outside of any dream. But at the center of this terror came the remembrance of you and the state you represent, which is beyond all fear, and it vanished, leaving me in an emptiness for some moments. I felt I understood a little of how loving you madly can enable me to go anywhere. Anadideva, this is a beautiful experience. Modern researchers, particularly dream researchers, have stumbled upon a new kind of dream. Just recently, they call it the breakthrough dream. This is a breakthrough dream. The normal dream, the ordinary dream, and the breakthrough dream are totally different dreams. This is the difference. This is of great importance to you all. If you can bring this quality into the dream, you will be able to go beyond dreaming. A breakthrough dream is a dream in which some kind of awareness arises in you. Ordinary dream is unconscious, passive. You simply go on watching. No awareness arises in you. You are simply identified with the dream. You don't remember a thing. You don't remember yourself. You are not aware at all. You are lost in the dream. The ordinary dream possesses you. The breakthrough dream is different. It is not passive. It is active. It is not just possessing you. You remain in some way alert of it. Gurdjieff used to teach to his disciples about such dreaming. This is a key to work deeper into your consciousness. He used to say to his disciples, try to remember yourself in the dream. And the only way to do is, if you remember the whole day, only then you can remember. So the method was, the person who was given this kind of work has to remember continuously the whole day. Walking on the street, he remembers, this is a dream. All these shops, these people, this man passing by, this noise, all this is a dream. This woman who looks so beautiful is a dream. This tree blooming is a dream. The man continues the whole day thinking, this is dream, this is dream, this is dream. He repeats it millions of times, this is dream. Naturally, this idea that this is dream penetrates more and more into his unconscious. Sooner, it is transferred from the conscious to the unconscious. Then, one day suddenly, it takes 3 to 6 months of constant repeating, this is dream, this is dream, this is dream. That one day suddenly in dream, he remembers, this is dream. And that very moment, a new energy has entered into dreaming. You are alert, aware. And this is not a new method. In the East, we have used it for centuries. In fact, the whole idea that the world is Maya is nothing but a philosophical statement of this technique. The world is Maya means the world is dream. You have to remember it. This is a dream, this is a dream, this is a dream. And then one day in dream you remember, this is a dream. And suddenly there is a gap between you and the dream. The dream is there, you are here, and there is a gap. You have awakened in the dream. And the moment you awaken in the dream loses all vitality. It disappears. It starts disappearing. and great emptiness arises. That's what has happened to you, Anadideva. You have stumbled upon a breakthrough dream. Just the other day I talked about four stages of consciousness: waking, dreaming, deep sleep, Surya, the fourth. Ordinarily you remain in the waking, because you can't even remember in waking. Your waking is almost asleep. You are only awake for the name's sake. Very rarely you are awake, even when you are in a wakeful state. Very rarely. If somebody comes suddenly with a revolver in his hand and puts the revolver on your chest, maybe for a moment you will become alert. Those moments can be counted on fingers in your whole life. Once I was traveling with a friend and the car fell into a river. The friend was driving. When the car fell, just for a few seconds, everybody in the car became alert that it is going to fall, because somehow the brake was not working and the speed was such that on a certain turn it became absolutely clear that now everybody in the car became alert that it is finished. And next moment we were all in the dry bed. It was summertime and the car was upside down. The moment we came out, nobody was hurt, but everybody was transformed. The man who was driving, he told me, "You have been talking about awareness, 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 and I have been listening to you for years. Now for the first time, I heard what you mean by awareness." For a moment, just on the words falling, I became aware. Now I know what it is. All became silent. Although death was so close, but all was utter bliss. Very rarely you become aware. But if you start trying to be aware, that is what vipassana is. An effort to be aware, watching, watching each act that you are doing, slowly, 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 very slowly, you start feeling a new kind of awareness, a new kind of presence. That presence makes you a different kind of individual, more integrated, more centered. Just the other day I was saying, I told you the story of the Buddhist monk who was invited by the prostitute to live with her for 4 months in the rainy season. Now Prabuddha has asked me a question and he says the story was ugly. Why not the Buddhist monk could move in love making with the prostitute? Why he was afraid? He was not afraid. And the story is not ugly. Maybe Prabuddha became too much interested in Amrapali and her beauty. Prabuddha must have started thinking, if I had been there, I would not have missed. And this foolish monk. And what was wrong in it, he says. It is not a question of wrong or right. But the monk was so centered. The monk was so much present into his self that all that the prostitute was doing to attract him must have looked him very juvenile, foolish, silly. What the prostitute was doing to enchant him was great from the side of the prostitute, and she was an artist in that art of alluring people, of hypnotizing people. And she was a beautiful woman. It is said she was the next famous person in Buddha's time. One was Buddha. Amrapali was the second. But if the monk is centered and has no feeling arising in him to go into lovemaking, why he should go? If he has transcended, why he should go? It is not that he was resisting. If he was resisting or repressing, then it is ugly. But why he should indulge if there is no desire in him? Just because of the prostitute? Why the story looks ugly to Prabhupada? No, he was very kind to the woman. Infinitely kind. Infinitely loving. But of course, the love of a centered man is totally different from the love of an uncentered man. He was a Buddha. That's why Buddha had allowed him to go. He had arrived. All desiring has disappeared from him. Now it was just a toy. And the story is immensely beautiful, because remaining centered, he helped the woman. He really must have loved the woman, because that is the greatest gift he could have given to her. If he had become involved, the woman would have thrown him out sooner or later. If he had become involved, the woman would have never gone to Buddha to become a disciple. This was the greatest gift that the monk could have given to the woman. The gift of Buddha. The gift of disciplehood. He made himself absolutely available to the woman to watch, to see in every possible way. He made his presence felt, and the woman came to me that this is something to be achieved. This is something worth. All that she has been doing up to now is worthless, insignificant, non-essential. This man has essential richness, the richness of the essence. She fell in love with the monk on a higher plane. She fell not only in love with the monk, she fell in love with samadhi, with enlightenment. In fact, that was the reason of the beauty of the monk. She had not gone into love because of the monk. The monk was just a vehicle. The energy was of that of enlightenment. He was luminous. She had fallen in love with that luminousness. The body of the monk was just like a lamp. And the luminousness inside was the flame. You don't fall in love with the lamp. You fall in love with the flame. If the monk had moved, the flame would have disappeared. And the woman would have found an ordinary man. very ordinary. Nothing special about him. Nothing valuable about him. The more the monk remains centered, and when I say remain centered, I am not saying that he is making any effort to remain centered. He is centered. It is effortless. It is spontaneous. It is natural. If there was any effort involved, the monk would have himself become afraid to go. He was not afraid. He slept in the same room with the woman. And the woman danced naked around him. And he sat in silence and meditated there. He remained alone. The woman must have tried every possible way. It was a challenge. It was a great challenge to her beauty. It was humiliating in a way, insulting in a way. She must have felt hurt. Her ego must have felt hurt. She tried in every way to seduce the monk, but failed again and again and again. Then she must have realized that he has some other kind of beauty. And he had some other kind of presence, and she became enchanted with that space. She followed him, became a disciple of Buddha. She became enlightened soon. Amrapali was one of the enlightened disciples of Buddha. The monk loved the woman. That's why he made his presence available with great kindness and compassion. There is nothing ugly in it. It is absolutely beautiful. The monk was a benediction, a blessing. But you go on moving in life, attracted by this thing and that. You are unaware. If you become aware, your attractions will start dropping, disappearing. And when you become aware in the dream disappears immediately. And there arises great silence. That silence is the third state, susupti. Deep sleep. A breakthrough dream means you have moved into the third and with a little bit of consciousness. That is a great experience. That is the first approach into the deepest layer of your being. Beyond that, there is only one state more, Turiya. Patanjali has said that deep sleep is closest to samadhi. It is. If you take one step more, you are a Buddha. Samadhi is the center. Turiya is the center. Around that center, the first layer is of sleep. The second layer is of dreaming. The third layer is of your so-called waking. You have to go deeper and deeper. Waking is the farthest from Turiya. Dreaming is a little closer. That's why psychoanalysis goes into your dreaming. Rather than thinking about your waking experiences, psychoanalysis goes into your dreaming, because there you are more truer, more honest, more simple, more natural. Yoga goes a little more deeper. It goes into susupti, deep sleep. A breakthrough dream is a dream which takes you to susupti. And after susupti, there is only a single step more. Zen and Tantra take you into that single step. It was a beautiful dream, Anadideva. I will read it again. Last night I had this dream. In the middle of the night, the sun appears. Completely out of its place. This filled me with a sacred terror, which was outside of any dream. But at the center of this terror came the remembrance of you and the state you represent. This is beautiful, that you could remember in your dream. You could remember me. Every disciple has to learn that. I have to be with you not only in your waking but in your dreaming too. And if I am there, dreaming will disappear. The very remembrance will disconnect you with the dreaming layer. But at the center of this terror came the remembrance of you and the state you represent, which is beyond all fear, and it vanished, leaving me in an emptiness for some moments. Those moments of emptiness are of the third state, susupti, deep sleep. Now, try to do it again and again. Every night when you go to sleep, go with this thought vibrating in you, pulsating in you, that if there is a dream, I will remember. Remember me. While you are falling asleep, go on remembering, so that it soaks into your sleep. When you are changing from waking to dreaming, let it be there, a subtle presence. And then slowly, slowly, you can transform all your normal dreams into breakthrough dreams. And each dream will lead you to the third stage, deep sleep. And when you can be aware in deep sleep, even for a few moments, you are coming closer home. Then one day you will be able to remember me even in that emptiness. And that very day, the sky opens up. That very moment, the sun really rises in the evening. It is very symbolic that you saw the sun rising in the middle of the night. It was in the dream state. Soon it will happen if you can remember me in the deep sleep, beyond which nothing can be said. But beyond that, all is. God is. The last question. Oh, Bhagwan, the whole life water falling on me, heaven and earth, work and play, everything I have ever been and done, all things I have ever wanted to will be, past and future, swelling, swelling, in balloon dancing now. This enlightenment is some crazy business? Crazy baby, crazy. Absolutely crazy. But don't be afraid. Go into it. And soon you will see the sanity of insanity. Soon you will see that it is not crazy. You have been all along crazy before it. It looks crazy compared to your life that has happened up to now. People are living in madness. So when they come closer and closer to some inner light, compared to their life, it looks crazy. Once it settles, the whole life looks crazy. Only this light, this awareness looks sane. Buddha is sane. Although he himself was worried many times, has he gone crazy? Others were also saying that he has gone crazy. Naturally, when all are competing in the world and everybody is rushing towards money, power and prestige, you start moving away from all this nonsense. When everybody is going extrovert, you start moving inwards. When everybody is going in one direction, you start moving in the polar opposite direction, diametrically opposite direction. It looks crazy. Once it happens, a drunkard was driving on a one-way street and was going in the wrong direction. He was puzzled because everybody is going the other way. The policeman stopped him and asked him, "Where are you going?" He said, "That I don't know. One thing is certain, that wherever I am going, I am late because everybody is coming back." When you start moving towards meditation, suddenly the whole world is going in one way and you are going in the opposite direction. And everybody looks at you with suspicion, "Where are you going?" And you will also look with suspicion at yourself. And the idea will arise again and again, "Have I gone crazy?" But one has to learn one thing. If you are feeling happy, don't be worried. Because craziness cannot give you happiness. If you are feeling less tense, don't be worried. Because craziness will give you more tension, more anxiety. If you are feeling more together, don't be worried. Then you are on the right track. You are moving towards well-being. You are moving towards wholeness. And that is what is happening, Punita. You say, "The whole life water falling on me. Heaven and earth, work and play, everything I have ever been and done, all things I have ever wanted to will be, past and future swelling, swelling, in balloon dancing now." Look at the beauty of the dance. Look at the benediction of nature falling like a waterfall on you. Look at the expanding consciousness, swelling, swelling. It will fill the whole sky soon. Even the sky is not the limit. This enlightenment is some crazy business. It is. But the people who become involved in this crazy business are the only sane people. Because theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are the mad, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Enough for today.